Did you hear the crazy? I heard a crazy rumor about Megalopolis. And this is from Kevin.
I heard this last night, take it with a grain of salt. Yeah.
And I was freaking out when I heard this. But apparently, at the screenings in LA, there was a plant in the audience who at one point walked up to the screen and was having dialogue with Adam Driver's character.
And it that was a thing that got reported, huh?
That is insane.
It is insane, considering that means, like...
It's impossible.
It's not a thing you can do at scale, really.
No. He's turned it into Star Tours or T2 3D or whatever. Like, it's
good God.
He's made a theme park
film. Did
that
make me feel even more confident in my prediction that it will be the best movie ever?
There's no way it's going to be the best movie ever.
Andy, it's so... We're looking at
a 3-star ceiling, I feel.
You are lost! You are in the woods, brother.
Welcome to Can I Kick It? This is a podcast about film festivals. My name is Emilio Diaz. Joining me today are...
Andy Gramuga.
Colin Edgley.
How are we doing today, folks? We are going to be talking about the newly released film La Chimera, directed by Alice Rohrwacher.
That's right. Last year at Cannes title.
Last year at Cannes. I saw it there. My co-hosts are seen it recently. In the last week or so. So we're here to have a conversation about it. We previously spoke about an Alice Rohrwacher film 4 years ago,
bro. That was 2020.
Okay, 4 years ago. That's good for me, man.
It was like in October or November, I think, that we did that episode.
Less than four, you know, but it was October 2020.
We talked about Happy as Lazaro, a movie I believe we were all some form of, like, everybody was in the range of, like, mixed negative to mixed positive on that movie. So, she's a very interesting director. She makes very interesting looking films.
Yeah. And I've seen, like, a lot of her work since then, because
you saw La Pupille, which was
I saw La Pupille, the Oscar nominated short from last year,
which it won, right?
Or it no, did not lost. Win. No, they never give it to the already won.
The good ones,
except for this year. And then also her, she co-directed that doc that I saw at NIFF.
Futura.
Yes. Which was just about young people in Italy talking about, like, their hopes for the future or whatever, which I thought was fine.
Yeah, I kind of heard from everybody that movie was fine.
Yeah, it's maybe my favorite of her films, however, but I don't know, maybe, I don't know. But yes, this one, it came out at Cannes last year. Did Neon have it at the time, or did they acquire it at the festival? I don't even remember.
They acquired it at the festival, I believe.
Yeah.
Because Happy Lazaro is straight Netflix, but I think Futura is a Neon also.
That does make sense.
Because Futura was co-directed by, like, Pietro Marcello, who's the...
Yeah.
The Martin Eden guy. And I don't... Martin Eden might have been? No, I don't think Martin Eden's a Neon movie.
No. It is not.
And Francesco Munzi was the other co-director.
Yeah, I think Francesco Munzi is just, like, the actual documentarian of the three of them.
Sure.
Though I think also Marcello's also does some documentary stuff. We don't need to get into that. Alice Rohrwacher, La Chimera. I saw it at its Cannes premiere.
Right, you were at the premiere.
You saw with Isabella Rossellini, so you knew that was going to be her in the movie.
Yeah, Isabella Rossellini. I mean, everybody was there.
Josh O'Connor was there.
Josh O'Connor was there. All of the very interesting faced Italian people that are in the film were there also. With their ancient noses.
Did they bring the statue head?
Andy, it's at the bottom of the freaking sea.
I mean, I don't... It's like, they don't really do speeches like after the premiere, you know? So it's like, they don't really say anything. Except that, I think there was some level of standing ovation. I sort of left very quickly because I did not want to be part of whatever happened.
You were determined never to be part of a Cannes standing ovation statistic?
Yeah. It truly was not even like related to what I thought about the film or its quality. Like, it could have been one of the greatest films I've ever seen, and I still, just integrity-wise, would have not wanted to be part of, like, Cannes standing ovation or everybody standing up. Congratulating themselves or whatever.
So I know that. So when you're in the theater, right? They're showing like footage of the red carpet and stuff. Like they have a live feed, right? Up, and then after the movie, they show that as well. Do they play the whole credits and then show it, or do they like cut off the credits? Because like at a TIFF Q&A or like a NIFNIT Q&A, like after the first credits block, they'll just bring the lights up and like the rest of the credits will play and everyone will come out onto the stage or whatever. But when they're showing the footage of people just standing in the audience to receive their applause, do they cut off the credits for that?
No, I believe they played the entire credits. The entire credits, and then they cut to the camera footage of the people the people inside the theater who they're like, pointing a camera in Isabella Rossellini's face or whatever. I think by the time they were starting to do that, I had left, so I didn't really have a lot to see there.
Right. So there is, like, there's, like, a fair amount of time if you want to make an exit before the standing ovation.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I obviously wasn't, I wasn't trying to be rude. The lights came up. Yeah.
He was still in the cave, and then Miller started walking out.
Yeah, I was like, this guy's lost down here. I don't need to see the end of this.
I got the gist.
Yeah. I'm sure he'll leave.
This guy's lost. I get it. I'm leaving. You've seen his friggin' wife, I'm sure. I'm getting out of here. I guess to do a brief, like, description of what the movie is. The main character, what's the main character's name?
They call him L'Inglese, because he's English. Arthur,
yeah. And it's... So Arthur, played by Josh O'Connor, he's this guy who's like spent a lot of time in Italy, and he, after a stint in prison that is initially mysterious and then revealed what he did afterwards, he comes back to this small Italian town he used to live in, where he gets caught up with the people that he used to know because he has a special ability where he can sort of divine and know where there are treasures hidden beneath the earth, and so they do grave robbing, and eventually he begins getting complicated feelings about the whole thing, is I guess the very general plot description of we can get into more detail
and at the same time he's got like a couple places where he like crashes, because he like Isabella Rossellini is the grandmother of his like ex girlfriend or his like his love, right? What's her status is sort of like is sort of a later reveal in the film. He also like he has like a little like sort of like makeshift like shed on like a hillside that he stays in. Isabella Rossellini has like a big family with like a lot of people who are in and out, but she also has like this like vocal student who's also a house servant who is has children of her own that she's like concealing from Isabella Rossellini. So he sometimes is like with her, and they like where she is like living and staying is like becomes a little bit more of a thing once the children are discovered. There's like it's very expansive. There's like a lot of different like he's very rootless and sort of shiftless, like, just sort of, like, all over the place throughout the course of this, as they're running these divining, schemes, to find, tombs all over Italy. And that's one of the more interesting aspects to me, is, like, the doing a story in Italy, like, with how long of a history Italy has, right? I always think about, like, how relatively short, you know, American history is, in terms of, having, like, huge populations, like, and things like that, and, like, what like old civilization is left behind. Like, there's just so much in places like Europe and in Italy where it's like where the record of like what used to be here is like gone. Like, there's no, like, you just lose that cultural memory of like, yeah, there's a bunch of like graves here, like, and like people do like new developments and stuff, and like, so they can just be like at the beach and then be like, oh yeah, there's like a bunch of graves around here, and like you might find a new one that like someone hasn't unearthed in like a very, very like hundreds of years, which is crazy.
Yeah, there's that great part where they open the tomb and you see it like hit light for the first time.
Yeah,
and it's like the paint fades, everything starts changing, and it's just like, it's really breathtaking, that part.
Yeah, stuff's old as hell.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess Colin, you've seen it. When did you get to see it?
I saw it a week ago exactly today as we record. Not in 9 hours, I guess it'll be exactly when I saw it. But okay.
Good to have that on the record.
Yeah.
And listeners, you can take that to the bank.
If Colin is ever accused of doing a crime at that time, he'll have an alibi.
And 9 hours is also, I think, when it ended. It started at like 7:30. But yeah, I saw it at the Music Box Theater in Chicago, and the small theater room, and it was great, I thought. I had a great time watching it. It was a cold day, and that movie warmed me thoroughly. It's so sunny. It's so lush. Helena Lovar, excuse me, doing incredible work. One of our best. And I think Josh O'Connor, a guy who I don't really have an opinion of, also great. Just, like, holds the camera so well. Everything he says is, you know, you're just interested. His vibe is so perfect for the movie. I was thinking a lot of, like, Long Goodbye and Elliot Gould and that. Just, like, disheveled guy walking around with a cigarette the whole time. And, like, all the stuff that he does where he's, like, growling at people is so funny. You don't like that, Andy?
No.
I mean, I love the whimsy of this movie.
Right. I feel like, yeah, I think I found a lot of the whimsy irritating.
No.
In this. I like his gang of grave robbers. I thought all of them were very annoying.
No, they're so
the like
the I was wondering if you were going to have the take of like what they're doing is wrong, so I don't like them.
There's a little bit of that. But I mean, the movie is like wrestling with that, certainly.
Yeah, of course,
like, sure. Fully endorsing that or their
yeah.
What I mean, but also like the whole system is like, yeah, right, where how they pass it off to these like museums these like, you know, these black markets. I guess they're fully black markets for art. But yeah, I mean, so yeah, there was that, and then there was, like, just, like, a lot of the stylistic, like...
The upside-down shots?
Upside-down, yeah, the growling, the, like...
The big scene where they're all barking at each other?
Yeah, right, the music...
I love that shit.
Right, the music, like, montages... Like,
the montage sped up.
The like techno montage where he's like learning sign language. I was like, what are we doing here? What is this for?
No, that's so good. I love that stuff.
What is this getting us? Yeah, it was just like I O'Connor is okay. I think he is like a little bit cyphery, perhaps intentionally, I think. I don't know. But he wasn't my like main problem with it or anything. But like, yeah, I just sort of found a lot of the like quirkier touches to be like just kind of not landing for me.
And Amelia, you also didn't like it when you saw it.
Yeah, I also had some problems with it. I don't know. My thing is, for most of its running time, I was finding it kind of pleasant and charming, very pretty to look at. I do think it's like, it's undeniably an extremely pretty movie to look at. Like, as Colin said, the Helene LuVar cinematography is excellent. But there's just like, I guess we're getting into slight spoilers here. But I remember always watching a lot of the movie and finding it pleasant and enjoying it. And then being like, I sort of am only taking this in as like an aesthetic experience. I don't know that I'm connecting to this emotionally or like intellectually at all. And then there's a point towards the end where Josh O'Connor basically makes a decision as mm-hmm. like the emotional like fulcrum point of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember him doing that thing and then I'm just like, oh, I guess I don't really get that or care for it that much. Like I think it wasn't really even like that decision specifically, but it was more like, oh, I feel like I was supposed to be taking more of a moral journey with these people when they made that decision. I'm supposed to be like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to have like some level of catharsis, and I just didn't. I was just like, oh, I guess I don't really care about whether these guys are like actually like selling their stuff or not. So with them deciding to, when he throws the statue into the ocean, I'm just like, oh, okay, all right. Sure, I guess that's what he did.
Yeah, but that,
took me out of it, where I was just like, oh, I guess I don't really care about the story of what's happening in this movie, fundamentally.
I think I read it more as it felt the catharsis was more just like emotional than it being moral, of like, he's had the experience with, you know, the singer, or like what's the character's name? Who's like the live-in maid?
Italia,
of course. Viva Italia. Which is so funny. Because they have the big thing on the beach where she finds out what they're doing after they've had this connection.
Just like, this is like accursed actions that you're taking. Like,
yeah. That's sort of like, you know, where it's the, and then he has, you know, he when he is in the cave after they like they're going
right
in,
when they out, when they the when they snap the head off of the
yeah he has
the statue,
the first sort of break with it, and then it's like by the point they get there, he makes the decision. Like for him, I think it's just he needs to be done with that.
No, statue. I mean, I get that. For me, it was. I guess it's
because like they're all mad at him afterwards. Yeah. I don't think it was like the whole crew is going through this like.
No, you know. I mean, I guess it's like it's not even a moral thing, but I think that moment sort of hit me as like, oh, I guess I don't really care about this character.
Sure.
So, where I was just like,
yeah. I also like in that like the way that like it telegraphs the fact that he's about to do something to the statue head. I was like, okay, like. And like it's if I felt like it was like really like dragging it out a little bit, which I thought was curious.
I've read a few complaints, or not just like people who have that take where they are like, I at the ending, I just like was waiting for the thing that I thought was going to happen. I'm like, I don't know. That movie, when I found out how long it was, I was surprised because it did not feel that long when I was watching it. And I sort of was just wrapped up the entire time.
I don't think the whole thing feels it's like. It's 2 hours and 10 minutes long. I don't think the whole thing feels that way. I think there were definitely parts where I was like, okay. Like,
I think I found it slow to start and slow to end. I think in the middle, it hits a groove where it's, like, very pleasant and it, like, moves very quickly and where they're getting into, like, those montages and stuff and we're in there. I like the crew. I like all those people hanging out. I'm almost like mad at him because he's like ruining the fun that all these guys are having.
The part where they have like the guy, the old guy that they like when they show the first time he's doing like his, you know, divining, he's using his stick to find the hole and he pretends to be sick and they're like all bullying him is really funny.
Right. Yeah. When they're like, you poisoned the alcohol you gave us for this or whatever. It's like, is that how they always do this scam? Is they always like insist that they get a drink and then they're like, you poisoned us?
It's funny.
Yeah, they have a whole
process. They're all scoundrels.
Yeah. And it's like, I think my problem is mostly just like the John O'Connor character, because I think most of the rest of the movie I really enjoy. And it's not even the performance, really. Because I do, it did, after I watched it, obviously, like, we saw Happy as Lazaro a long time ago at this point. But it did sort of remind me of my problem with Happy as Lazaro, where I'm just like, this guy is just too much of a cipher for me to connect with the rest of it, I think. And obviously, the Josh O'Connor character is less, like, Arthur is less of a cipher than the Happy as Lazaro, because that is the most cipher any character has ever been. That guy is, like, all, like, mute, he is, like, almost mute Forrest Gump. But Arthur is not that. But the, like, Long Goodbye comparison is a thing I get because of, like, clothing and sort of vaguely energy. But it's, like, him in the Long Goodbye is, like, funny. And I like watching him. And I don't find Arthur that funny.
I'm fully in his emotional journey of, like, finding something of his lost love or whatever. Because I feel like I had heard that, he had, like, a dead girlfriend, like, before I had seen it. That was, like, what I had understood to be the premise. So, like, when it starts with that, I was like, oh, okay. And then there's, like, at Rosalini's house, she's got all the other daughters, and it's, like, the one daughter, she's, like, she'll come back, and, you know, they're sort of teasing that out or whatever. And then, obviously, at the end, when he pulls the thread, it's, like, one of the most beautiful endings of the year. Of 2023, I mean, of last year. I was on the journey the whole time, and, like, I just locked in with that, of, like, this guy begrudgingly doing everything to, I mean, the Long Goodbye comparison is mostly just vibe, but, it is just, like, the, like, him getting out of the prison and, like...
Right, so, yeah, when you meet him, he's, like, on the train, and he's, like, with some, like, local girls... And, some kind of, like, guy who's selling his wares, right, comes in and starts making fun of him for smelling bad. And, like, then he sort of, like, reacts a little bit violently and gets everyone to sort of leave him alone. I was intrigued by him at the top of the film, I think, and, like, seeing him sort of, wander his way back, and he, like, when he first gets there, he, like, doesn't want to fall back in with the crowd, right? He just sort of wants to, like, pay off his debts, and, like, it seems like he's wanting to make some sort of a clean break from this sort of lifestyle, and, like, not use his gift anymore to discover the treasure and stuff, and, like, have some sort of a different life, but he quickly is not able to do that and sort of falls back in with them. That stuff I think is interesting, and like his where he starts, set up like an intriguing thing for me that I was ready to follow, and then it just sort of like him sort like backtracking into like what his old life must have been. Just was not as compelling to me as the movie wanted
to be. You had to pay off some debts.
Yeah, right. Because he had like a stash of stuff, but it was all gone when he got there. What did you think of the Rosalini stuff, like with the house and the like and Italia, like her having her do her singing lessons while also, like, being like, you need to do the ironing and stuff. What would, was that, like, I guess that was supposed to, it's supposed to be, like, a little bit wacky and like, funny in that way. I wasn't super, like, on that wavelength, but you were more, Cullen, I think.
That's some of the stuff that isn't my favorite in the movie.
Sure.
I think everyone's pretty good, but it is sort of just, like, it feels... Once the Italian character gets more involved in the, like, outside the house O'Connor sure. plot,
mm-hmm.
it is more interesting. But, like, in the house, it's sort of just, like, you know, the stuff with right. the kids, you know, it feels a little more, like, meaningful at the end. But, like, in the moment, right. for sure, I was just like, what are we doing? Like, this is, like,
yeah,
a little bit right. treading water, maybe.
Right. The Rossellini and, like, the family stuff, like, is a weird dead end, I feel like, in the movie. Like, that, like, it doesn't... I see there's some a lot of stuff that...
The O'Connor-Rossellini relationship I like, and I think her loving him so much because yeah. he's with the daughter.
Right.
And, like, him... Like, they're them maintaining this relationship, even though...
Yeah.
Like, he knows that the daughter's dead and she doesn't, is nice. And, like, all the sort of... look like redhead daughters that are all like want to take the lamps and stuff I think are funny.
Sure.
And like they want to like, you know, they want the house, they don't care about the mom.
Right.
I think that stuff is, you know, it's nice ambiance.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she's good at ambiance. Cause I do think I remembered liking that about Lazzaro, so just, like, the house they live in and all the people sure. swirling around and all those dynamics.
I mean, the big
I think she's
collections
good at
of people she loves. Like,
yeah,
The Wonders is about a huge family.
Yeah. I think I found that stuff... I think I mostly enjoyed that stuff. I think his relationship with Italia, I think I go in and out on. I think there mm-hmm. are times I think they have a lot of chemistry and it works, and there are other times where it feels a little like we need him to fall in love with somebody so he can decide to not be in love with this lady. But it's like interesting. It's like there's some stuff in there.
I do like, you know, he, you know, tries really hard to love her and then knows he can't, so then he starts working with the bad guys or whatever, like doing another job for like not his friends. Do you think I was talking to Kevin about this yesterday. Do you think that he lost his mojo at the end? Is what Kevin asked me.
Lost? Do I think he doesn't have his power anymore there at the
end? Yeah.
Well, I think it's less like.
It was an interesting. I hadn't really considered it, that aspect of it until. Well,
I think it's making you think that a little, but I think what it's getting at, or at least what I took about it more, is like whatever his mojo or his power was at any point was just like some connection to the dead he had, yeah. and that connection to the dead led him back to like the dead end that is his wife.
That's a good call. Yeah,
where it was like that's just like. The end point of everything he's done is leading him back to his dead wife's girlfriend. Did they get married? I feel like I think
they were fiancés. I think because he's. Yeah. I think they referred to her as
his dead love. Still, like, yeah,
yeah.
I feel like that's what
we don't need these labels.
Behind. Sure. No.
But yeah, I think that's what it's getting at. It's more like I think what. If you were to think, if you were to like put some like thematic structure over the whole thing, and what I've seen people write about who enjoy the movie about is like sort of this connection that he has with like art and the world,
yeah,
which is sort of what leads him to have this power, which lets him find artifacts that are stuck underground, and you know, sort of his confliction with it being some sort of conflict about. You know, taking advantage of this in the wrong way. Like, he has a special connection to the earth, and instead of using this for good things, he is sort of stealing it, and he's sort of running these wells dry. And at some point, at the end, it's sort of leading to him running himself dry, where it's like he has nothing else to find. Like, all his entire life exists in the past. Him leaving Italia and that sort of commune at the end is him being sort of like, there is no future. My entire relationship with the world is in the past, whether it be like my power to find these tombs or my obsession with like my dead love.
Yeah. You can't get past it, can't beat it.
No. He can't see a way forward.
And if you can't beat him, join him.
Yeah. He does.
Which is beautiful. I thought the ending was so moving.
I'm absolutely completely blanking on like what the actual ending was, having seen
when he's like underground in the cave and he pulls the thread and then he's up.
Oh sure, right. And then the hole gets bigger, right? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, for me it was just a thing where it was like one of those weird situations where I'm like, I understand just like filmmaking wise that this is like beautiful. Like it's executed excellently, but I'm just not feeling it, and that's sort of sometimes a disconnect you exist with.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know,
great suits, great dresses. A lot of people,
the Iron Claw or whatever.
Yeah, I guess.
Or it's like a lot of people found that movie very affecting, and I watched that. I'm like, that's not. There's no emotion here. there's a big distance here at the end.
Sure.
Whereas this, I'm like, I was fully on board with it the whole time. Just his, the journey for love. And there's, I mean, I think the sign language stuff is good. Because then, it's just like all sort of, not set up, knocked down, but like, it plants these seeds and then you get the nice little callbacks to them. And like, at the end, they have their sign language conversation, and it's just like it's very beautiful. I do love the crew a lot. I love when they go through the town doing like the big parade.
The big parade when they're the state fairy thing or whatever, when it's like a party in the town, everybody's dancing, everybody's having a good time.
Because they're like getting ready for it, and he sort of leaves, right? And then he's sort of walking, and they just sort of come up behind him and like sort of re-scoop him up to be like a part of that, like, because they're all like in drag or whatever.
There's also
they do a lot of songs. There's like the guy with the guitar and stuff.
Well, yeah, there's the big montage set to the song when they're like showing what their whole like journey through the seasons or whatever. But there's the, because Albo Roarrocker is the, what's the character's name?
Spartacle.
Of course. Who is the art dealer.
Right, who they don't see for a while, right? Yeah. That's that scene, the first, like, where they go to, like, the brokerage, like, area, and, like, there's some people waiting, and the one lady gets annoyed that they're like getting called in ahead of her because she's been waiting for a long time. And the guy's like, "It's an emergency, ma'am," or whatever. And then they like,
"That's a crazy building."
It is weird because there's like all sorts of buttons and stuff that like are. It's like weirdly, like it could be because so much of the movie is like this like old timey stuff. Like the aesthetic of like the past is so present throughout it, and like all the houses are like crumbling and like in disrepair, and like there's all these like overgrowth of nature and stuff. I feel like it's like the only time where it's like a completely like non-natural environment that they're in is when when they're in this this like art dealer office, and like there's like weird buttons, and it's like the way it's captured is interesting because like it still has like the same like the cinematography look is very similar still, like there's not like a lot of like change in necessarily style, but the production design is so different. And then they go into this room and it's like it is like the high tech, like the quote unquote high tech thing where it's like the thing spins and they put all their stuff on it, and then it spins, and then like the guy's on the phone and being like, "Spartaco says this, Spartaco says that, Spartaco says the other thing," right? And then it spins back around and there's just money on it or whatever. Like, the weird sojourn into like the like the weirdly technological side of things in this like old antiquities dealership world was a nice contrast for me.
Yeah, and the when they're on the boat, also there's like the crazy hydraulic like
right, you, right. You hear the whatever, noises and it, a they lot. Show it's it, very it's present. Just,
like, the when you see technology like that, it is sort of striking in a way.
Yeah, and then yeah on the boat, like, her slideshow too.
Yeah, because for most of the movie, he's like in this like village or like around these towns that are very like rural, and it, in him wearing his like crumpled up suit, he seems like he's out of time. He seems like he's from like a different
right.
He's from a more advanced era than the rest of these people, and then like having them actually engage with like the rest of the world. Technologically is very fascinating to look at.
Yeah, we should talk about the suit some more, because I feel like that's like a thing that people are really talking about. Like,
people people really love the suit. It's a great suit for sure. It's one of the sure. most striking yeah. character looks a character in a movie has had in a while. It's a great look.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, it's like a white linen suit that's like pretty, it's I feel like it's constantly dusty. It's like not like tattered or anything really, I don't feel like, but it's like, like it is the fact that he's like constantly in nature is like very apparent.
Dirty.
Yeah, it is very sweaty. Wrinkled. It's yeah. like it's sort of yellow, and but there is part of you where you're like, is this a sort of, is this suit supposed to be like cream and it's just like very dirty? Like what's happening?
Yeah. yeah. Right. And like, yeah, at the top the guy like makes fun of him for being stinky or whatever. And like you don't ever get the sense, like I don't think you ever see him outside of the suit, right, at all. Like you don't get a sense that he has like other clothes or like or anything like that. Like yeah. it's it yeah. really is like, sort of like he's like it's like yeah, a cartoon character uniform. Like the,
yeah, he's like stuck in the past. The suit version of him is the only version of him that really exists. He can't find a way forward. It's a great piece of character design. It's, you know, it's very striking. You never lose him in any scene. It goes great with like the sort of color palette of the movie, of these very like lush greens and yellows.
And there's also, he's got that great, the big brown jacket.
Yeah, the big brown jacket.
There's also that, his, like, I guess dream sequence, where he's, like, back on the train, and everyone
sure. I mean,
is,
yeah,
like,
he has, there's a lot of dreaming going on,
right,
for sure.
Right, because, and, right, and where he, everyone is, like, talking about how they have been robbed by him, like, they're, like, the dead people yeah. whose belongings he has helped facilitate the taking of yeah it, which like yeah there is some of that weird more surreal stuff you know people always throw around the word magical realism I feel like when they're talking about Rohrwacher, which is like not quite what it is I don't think
sure
but right yeah there is like that like there's moments of departure for sure. And it doesn't quite feel like the reality of the film is a little more elastic than in some others.
Yeah.
Yeah. She likes playing with the magical realism. And what else do we have to say about old La Chimera? It is sort of interesting. It's like, I've always tried to, like, understand my... Try to... Every, like, 2 months, I'm like... I need to think about La Chimera again. Maybe I'd like it more. And I do think, but I do think I always will come back to the same fundamental problem that I have with it.
I imagine if you're not into the main character, it is hard to get on board with the movie. It's like all him.
Yeah, it's a lot of him. To the point where I think I struggle with it. Really. And it's like, I remember after I saw it at Cannes, I was supposed to write a review about it. And I struggled to write it for a long time. I like, had a lot of drafts to the point where I like took too long to write it, because it was sort of hard for me to get my feelings out of just me being like, fundamentally, aesthetically, I think there's a beautiful movie that has a lot of beautiful things to say. There's a lot of like interesting avenues to explore, and it has these like wide casts of like very real seeming characters, which are all things that I enjoy in movies, but I at the end of the day I just don't connect with it that much. Which is sort of a hard way to be with a movie, because you're sort of left in limbo of just like, well, It's like if somebody asked me, should I watch La Chimera, I'd probably be like, yeah, you should watch La Chimera. It's sort of worth watching just to, like, to look at it. But if somebody asked me if, like, I enjoyed it a lot or it was a favorite at all, I would probably have to end up at no. And I do think, like, this and Lazzaro both were doing a similar thing to me where I'm just like, this is a crazy thing to say, but it's almost too beautiful to where it's like I can feel every moment of it sort of straining for a sort of, like, magical realism, like sort of the beauty of nature and the beauty of the world sort of thing, to the point where it sort of affects my connection to these people as characters. But I sort of also understand there are probably movies that are doing that also that I do connect with, so I don't know. I think it might just be a specific thing in approach that's happening.
I do think it is her strongest film that I've seen, and like I feel the sort of things that I like would complain about The Wonders or Happy as Lazzaro being sanded down, I guess, or like she's honing the craft more, I feel, and I can feel it. I feel like she's just getting better and better, and that this is like far and away her best, and I think I'm very, very excited to see what she does next, and I gotta see La Pupille.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I remember at TIFF last year, I saw this other Italian movie. I believe it's called An Endless Sunday. I don't even remember really the title of it. It's about these, like, teens going around Italy, and they're having a lot of, like, drama between them. And it also has sort of an extremely crazy look and, like, a very crazy ending. And I remember after I saw that movie being, like, almost pithily being, like, maybe I just don't like Italian film that much, because they have, I think what I said specifically is, like, they believe in hell too much for, I think, me to connect to any movies where it's, like, they really enjoy sort of movies about a sort of divine punishment, which is obviously a lot lighter in La Chimera than in that movie, but there is still some element of just, like, your actions sort of dooming you to a fate, to where I struggle to connect with it a little bit. But that's maybe a little unfair to La Chimera, which, well, I think is more interesting things.
It is interesting, because, like, the moment where Italia, like, realizes what they're doing and, like, starts to raise her objections to it, she does it in, like, an extremely classic Italian way, I feel like, where it is, like, very old school, like, you are messing with, like, things that you are not supposed to mess with, like, like the devil himself is, like, going to, like, come and, like, she does say, like, I curse you, like it's, like, classic, like, old school Italian morality sort of there, which is, like, it's interesting that that's, like, I feel like that's the first time that, like, a moral objection is, like, vocalized in the film to, like, the stuff that they're doing, which is not to say the film is not, like, at least ambivalent about what they're doing prior to that moment or whatever, but, like, yeah, it is interesting that, like, the vocal objection to it does come from that, like, old school Italian tradition. I feel like
it's, like, I have enjoyed some Italian films in the past where it's like I've enjoyed the one Fellini movie I've seen, but I do think there is sort of, like, a very blown out modern aspect of, I don't know. It's sort of a weird conversation to have, because you obviously don't want to paint an entire country's worth of film with a broad brush. I'm sure there are a lot of bunch of people making very different things there. But there is a... I think when they're sort of going for, like, the sort of magical thing, I can struggle with it a little bit. But again, I think it's worth watching. It's very pretty. There's a lot of cool stuff in it. I think Josh O'Connor... Because that's also the problem with it, where it's like, I don't even have a problem with performance, really. I think he's a fairly good actor, and I think he's mostly compelling. I think it is more just, like, a turn within, like, the structure and writing of the movie that I'm supposed to go on that I cannot really. But I think he's very watchable. He has a lot of face, you know? I mean, everybody in the movie has a lot of face. They're Italians. But, sure. I mean, he is not, and he sort of finds himself within it very comfortably, and
yeah,
he's a compelling watch. I'm excited to see him in Challenger.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Cool. I'm excited for Challengers.
What is so, like, compelling about him, or, like, there's just something about the way that every character in the movie is so, like, in awe of him and finds him so important, and they, everyone else is doing such a good job that it, buoys his and makes his, like, elevates it even higher, where you are buying what they are selling so much because he's already so sort of just compelling on his own that it's, like, it all just worked. It was all working.
Yeah, he's an interesting. You're right. I have seen, I think,
I've only seen Emma.
I've seen The Crown that he's on.
And I think he's funny. I think he's, I forgot that he is in Emma, really. Like, I should watch
that. I don't remember him in that.
But he's funny. I remember, like, in recollecting that he was in it, I did remember that he was funny in it. And,
I think he has, like, a fan base, I think, because, like...
Sure, he'd stay on Twitter or whatever.
There were, like, a lot more, like, young people at the audience last night than I was expecting, sure, necessarily. And, like, some people came out for Neo, or whatever.
You know?
I guess maybe.
Not to be, like, gross about it, but as I was watching it, I was like, I feel like people are going to like this movie a lot. I just...
Love Chimera? Probably. Yeah. I mean, people like it for sure. So, I don't know...
It's just so charming, I think.
It is charming. I don't know how what that
appetite. Did not find it charming.
That's. I think funny. It's mostly charming. I just kind of like a bunch of, you know, I like a crew of guys who are just like
Yeah, the crew guy, like, that's when I think the movie is at its best, when it's like the middle 45 minutes of them just, like, doing all their stuff. I mean, I really do love the ending also, like, not to discredit. Yeah.
It is a little long. We don't need to get into, like, whether their commercial prospects for a movie like La Chimera. It'll make them money. It needs to make. I'm sure it's not an expensive movie. Maybe Isabella Rossellini was making $20 million. Who knows?
Yeah,
But it seems closer to.
She's everywhere, like, these days. She'll voice over.
Get her Marcel Lachelle. They can get her anything.
She's the narrator in Problemista, of course. Also,
whoa.
She's doing a lot.
That movie rules. I think that movie's great.
That's a real snuck out there movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to wonder. I guess he was in The Crown. So everybody, there's a bunch of The Crown.
And, like, he was on The Crown at peak The Crown. Like, he, and was, like, the early Diana storyline was, like, when everyone was like, oh my god, The Crown. Like, I feel like it really took off.
And then, obviously, he aged into who plays older Charles. What's the fucking liar?
Dominic.
Yeah, Dominic West. Yeah. It's an interesting evolution.
Josh O'Connor turning into Dominic West. I have not seen the last two seasons of The Crown, the Imelda Staunton years.
The Imelda Staunton years.
I'll get back to it one of these days, maybe.
Saved by the Bell.
Saved by the Bell, the Imelda Staunton. What is he doing next? The History of Sam.
Challengers.
Challengers is coming out next week? This week as this podcast arrives, right?
Somewhere around there.
The History of Sound and Olivier Hermanis film. What is Olivier Hermanis? Oh, The Living.
He did Living.
Okay.
Oh, sure. Living's great.
Great?
Yeah.
Let's maybe...
Underrated, certainly.
No, it's not. It was nominated for an Oscar.
One.
It's sort of the Oscar.
It got flowers. I think
two nominations. Living. Right. Yeah, it got the adapted screenplay nomination. That's right. That was fun. That's good. Maybe it's properly rated. It's probably, yeah, those were the elements.
Yeah. Too. They did a Sony Pictures Classic hat giveaway for it. I think they're doing okay.
Sony Pictures Classic have, like, a secret hat division.
Yeah.
For some reason they made
a bunch of bowler hats that they gave away for Living. And then they did the same famously for the Phantom of the Open bucket hat, which
I don't know if you heard, but I did win one.
Do they? That's right. Do old people love hats?
Well, in the movie Living, he wears a big hat.
I know he wears a big hat, but I'm just like, why is Sony Pictures Classic specifically doing a bunch of hat giveaways?
What would you rather they be giving away? What
I mean, they don't need to give away anything.
Yeah.
But,
what kind of like, merch? Well, that's because these were Twitter contests, right? Like, it was like, it's not like the Sony Pictures Classics today. Audience is on Twitter. Yeah. Like,
you can never do that.
And I guess Living kind of had an iconic bowler hat, but it's like, it's not like Phantom of the Opera of the Open had like a specific hat thing within
the
movie.
Well, he wears a bucket hat in the movie.
But is it like that big a part, or is it just like golfers wear bucket hats?
I mean, he wears it in the movie and he's on the fucking poster. You gotta get it where you can, man.
But he also wears like a vest or. That would be a better giveaway if they gave away golf balls. It's the same thing.
Golfers wear bucket hats, golfers use golf balls.
But a lot of other people who aren't golfers wear bucket hats. Only people who play golf.
Yeah, and if you want to market your movie, you got to market it to some non-golf people.
I don't think they market it to the golf people.
It wasn't marketing, it was a giveaway for fans.
Yeah, that's a marketing move. You think that wasn't a marketing department initiative?
It didn't.
You think they were just grateful? I guess
it did get me to pirate Phantom of the Open.
And with that. La Chimera and Peter's now.
Started on La Chimera.
That's right.
Do you have anything else?
I have so much more to say about La Chimera.
Do you like Will Rocker in it? I thought she was pretty good.
She's good. She's got a...
She's got... The Spartacus a woman reveal. Like, whoa! Like,
yeah, but I feel like... Were we to understand that they had sort of had conversations, like, they had interacted before? Because it felt like when they... Like, everyone else was surprised, but O'Connor was just like... deal or whatever.
Like. I thought it was implied that like,
O'Connor well, right. Had that one conversation they have is all through the intermediary. He's the one.
Well,
on
sure,
the
ones that we see at least. But I'm saying like, I just felt like.
I guess I thought it was implied that O'Connor had some other dealing
with her,
or something. Yeah. She's good. She a little bit like O'Connor. Not to be rude to either of them as actors, because I do think they're good actors, but it's sort of like, they both have such good looks that I wonder if, like, the look is doing 90% of the work. But I think they're giving decent performances out of it.
She
shows up with, like, she has a very yellow dress look, and then with the bright yellow dress, and, like, if she's wearing, like, shoulder pads and a suit at some point also, right?
And there's the thing where she's like, the way she's selling the statue headless is like priceless or whatever, and it's like that's the only flaw or whatever, and then like when she discovers the possibility of having the head, like you can see her like doing the calculations in her head of like, how do I play this? Like, she at one point is like, I'm the only one who you can possibly do a deal with on this, like that, like, yeah, her sort of like her shark status of like she's gonna get the best deal possible for her, and like the way she's selling the statue where she's like the price is incalculable because like who can tell how many like tourists are gonna want to come see this and pay money to see this, like that sort of thing. Like, I like all that from her.
It is fine. Yeah, but she's a good actress. I feel like we've seen her in other things that aren't even, you know, Alicia Rohrabacher movies.
Yeah, what was she in, that she was really good? Is she in Lost Daughter?
Yeah, she is in Lost Daughter. She's got a cool look in Lost Daughter.
I was thinking a lot about she's in La Pupille she's on My Brilliant Friend.
Whoa.
Which Alicia Rohrabacher did produce or direct two episodes of, but
she's in Finally Dawn, the Saverio Costanzo movie with Lily James, Joe Keery, Rachel Sinnott, and Willem Dafoe that played in Venice last year and will never come out.
I guess she's in I Am Love, which I've never seen.
Really, you're Guadagnino.
Yeah.
She's in the Bombach.
Yeah, she's upcoming in the Bombach and in the Pablo Lorraine both their next movies, which is interesting.
Sure.
Excited for her to see her in a Baumbach. I mean, that Baumbach, that might be the greatest movie of all time.
What a cast. Clooney?
Yeah. Sandler.
Clooney's going to be awesome.
Clooney, Sandler, Duren, Crudup, Riley Keough, Jim Broadbent. There's a lot of people in it.
Yeah. Have we got cinematographer yet? Is he bringing back LOL?
I assume he's working with all the people he'd worked with recently.
Ooh, Billy Crudup.
Yeah, the Crudup.
Jamie Dimitrio. Ooh.
Everyone loves getting those people.
Patrick Wilson? Lars Josh Eidinger Hamilton? Back. There's a lot of people in it.
Lars Eidinger, for real?
Yeah. He's on the list.
Holy moly.
And Isla Fisher's post-divorce comeback.
Stacy Keach?
Crazy Stacy Keach is still alive.
Who shot Meyerowitz Stories? Robbie Ryan, right?
Yeah, Robbie Ryan.
That movie looks so good.
Yeah. Lil Crawley was White Noise?
Yeah. Which also I love.
But his previous two are Robbie, like Marriage Story.
Yeah, he did Marriage Story as well.
I maybe like how the Robbie Ryan ones look more than White Noise looks. But I think they all look good. But I think I remember really liking how Meyerowitz looks like.
Meyerowitz looks incredible.
And what Marriage Story looks like. And White Noise obviously has like a lot of stuff.
A very different look, yeah.
Yeah. It's almost hard to compare because they're doing.
Yeah.
They're existing in such different realities.
White Noise is so major. I think about that movie all the time.
That's a lot.
Until Megalopolis, the best driver performance, I think. Except Ferrari. Decided. He's kind of only. He is better like every single time. He's so good in Ferrari. Well, it seems like we're at the end of the.
I think it, me and Andy were both like, I don't think we want to start this conversation.
I don't want to instigate more.
Yeah, this kind of like just there's a bear and you just don't want to move.
Special presentations.
Colin, I'm sure you have a lot of things you could specially present.
That's true.
Mr.
That's
Chicago.
True. I think...
Mr. Cause.
Listen, if you live in the Chicago area and you can get yourself down to Lardon and get the Frenchie, it's a sandwich, it's a baguette, and it's got cured ham, pork pate, Dijon mustard, brie, and a cornichon mayo. Fucking one of the best sandwiches I've ever had. They have kettle cooked chips, but they're also very thin, which I never had. I feel like kettle cooked chips, you always get the hard crunchy, and these were like thin crispy, but with a kettle flav, kettle dappled potato. Really great. And they have draft Negronis, which I've never heard of.
I was listening to a podcast, I guess it wasn't that recently, but somebody was talking about how they were anti kettle cooked chips because they were too hard and they hurt his teeth. And then they instantly got made fun of. But I do think sometimes the kettle cooked chips be a little too hard.
It's too much of a crunch.
I can see that.
There's like, when it's perfect, it's the best chip, obviously, just like easy, just like a nice like salt and vinegary like kettle cooked chip. But sometimes they really be making you work for it.
When it's like folded in a big clump.
Yeah. Yeah, when it's, like, folded, so it's basically you're, like, biting through two of them to have to bite through them.
Or, like, five or six, even.
Yeah. Andy,
and also the new Vampire Weekend album, Only God Was Above Us, I think is really strong. More classic Vampire Weekend style than Father of the Bride, obviously. Sounds great on vinyl, not to be that guy, but I did pre-order it, and I've been spinning it up, and it sounds... really, really good. I think Prep School Gangsters is one of my faves. I love classical. I love Connect. I love Pravda. I really love Mary Boone. They're, you know, it's good to have a new Vampire Weekend now that I'm only ever listening to Vampire Weekend.
Yeah, I have been really diving into television right now. It's the big TV time, of course. TV, it's more vital than ever. The Netflix pickup of the Showtime cast-off of Ripley, starring Andrew Scott, written and directed by Steve Zaley in all 8 episodes, is really incredible, I think. It's, like, so gorgeous to look at. It's that, you know, everyone is talking about the Robert Elswit black and white cinematography, super high contrast. Like, just, like, every shot is gorgeous and, like, it is so... There's so much of it that is, like, visual storytelling of, like, you know... He's thinking, like, you're, like, it's very, like, obvious and, like, not, like, subtle or anything, but it's, like, the way that, like, it will linger on the ashtray that he recently used to kill someone, and then, like, the detective who's interviewing him is, like, using it with his cigarette, and so, like, the way that all that stuff comes together is just very satisfying and just really a joy to watch. I think it's really incredible. I think there's a lot of great performances in it. Obviously, Andrew Scott, one of a recent fave of mine. Dakota Fanning's really good in it as Marge.
Johnny Flynn.
Yeah, you got Johnny Flynn. Speaking of Emma. Yeah, as Dickie. Kenneth Lonergan.
The Philip Seymour Hoffman character.
Yes, it is. What is their name? It is.
I always confuse because it's Freddie Lowndes is Manhunter, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The actor's name is Elliot Sumner, who is, I know, the child of Sting, I believe.
Whoa.
They are, non-binary.
How long do you think it took them when they conceived that child? Sting loves that long sex.
I'm sure you have made the joke that every single other person has made to Elliot across their entire life.
I'm not making it to them, I'm just making it about them.
Sure, but I mean, the joke's been made, I'm sure.
I forgot that I said that I was the guy who came up with it. Not just that it was a funny thing we could all laugh at.
That's the sound of me not laughing.
How's sugar?
How's sugar? Haven't checked out sugar yet. But intrigued to maybe try.
Do you know what sugar is, Emilio?
Not really.
Colin Farrell, Apple TV detective show.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah. Have you seen there's a big twist.
Monsieur Spade, Andy?
No, I have not.
Nobody's watching Monsieur Spade.
Yeah, it's on AMC Plus, buddy. It's not gonna be a huge hit.
Everyone loved the chess show.
Yes, that was on Netflix, the platform everybody has. This is how television works, is you gotta be on the right platform, sadly. Not everyone's like me, and it's like, I will subscribe to any streaming service. No questions asked. But yes.
You pay for Tubi, right?
Yeah, that's right. I just send them a check every month.
You're the one guy.
Yeah, I want them to have some walking around money.
You're the reason they changed the logo.
That's right.
You gave them the tip.
Yeah.
You know what's cool? Purple.
Purple and yellow. I mean, certainly, don't get me started on how many streaming services are blue these days. It's a real problem. The Max, recent
Paramount Plus,
Prime Video is blue. Disney Plus was bluer than it is now. It recently like became a little more green, which I think was an upgrade. I have
Don't
thoughts
get
about
me started
this stuff.
Immediately gets him started. He did, you know, and he was right. I shouldn't have.
Yeah. HBO Max was purple, and that was better, and then they changed to blue when they became Max, one of the many blunders that they were making in the Max transition.
But, I mean, Apple TV, Watch TCM, Netflix, Criterion, these are all black, Andy.
That's true. Yes. I mean, right, but I guess, right, black, and Netflix is, like, the white and red, and so they have their own thing. AMC Plus is, like, a green, yeah. Anyway... Emilio, do you have a special presentation?
I had one 5 minutes ago that I don't remember. Oh, yeah, wow. Sure. I was listening to this. This is an album that is out only on YouTube, or you can download it on a GeoCities page. This is an album called Diamond Jubilee by the artist Cindy Lee. It's sort of a 2-hour sort of old school rock and roll, kind of like girl groupie adjacent, musically. It's sort of hard to describe. It's very Blue Velvet as a vibe. So if you enjoy David Lynch's Blue Velvet and the musical stylings within it, it's sort of operating within that space, and it's very good. And it's just on YouTube, and it's 2 hours long, but it's all good. And I, even though it's 2 hours long, I have listened to it 3 times, start to finish. So it's worth checking out. I also had a good bacon mac and cheese burger yesterday. That was good. So if anybody in Puerto Rico wants to go to the food truck Bluefin, people should go. It's good. And with that, if you want to donate to our podcast, you enjoy it, you can donate money at ko-fi.com/CANNESI. And with that, I will release our audience.
Bye.
Bye.